All right, let's dive into this whole chemophobia thing, you know, that fear of anything labeled chemical. You sent over some really interesting stuff from Cocktail Party Chemistry, and I'm curious to unpack why the word chemical gets such a bad rap these days.
Well, it's a fascinating topic. It really gets at how we make decisions about, so many things, not just what we buy, but also our health, the environment. It's kind of everywhere.
Totally. And the material you sent over, it lays out these five key facts, almost like Mythbusters, but for chemicals. But before we get to those, is there something about how our brains work that makes us prone to this chemophobia in the first place?
Well, what's interesting is that humans have evolved to be, risk averse, which makes sense. Our ancestors, who were a bit too relaxed about potential dangers, they probably didn't, pass on their genes.
So we're hardwired to be a little bit suspicious.
Yeah.
But does that backfire in today's world? Like, is there a mismatch between actual chemical threats
Yeah.
and how scared we feel of them?
That's a really key question. And it ties into how our brains deal with information overload. When we're bombarded with messages about toxic chemicals everywhere we turn, it's easy to get overwhelmed and just default to that ancient better safe than sorry mode.
Okay, that makes sense. So that's the setup. Now let's get into these five facts from Cocktail Party Chemistry. Because they seem like good tools to fight back against, like you said, that information overload. The first one is pretty basic. Everything is made of chemicals.
Right, and that's exactly where that knee-jerk chemicals are bad reaction. It kind of gets us into trouble. If we don't stop to think that even water, oxygen, even the things that make up our own bodies, it's all chemicals, then we're not really having a productive conversation, are we?
Okay, but hold on. While I get that everything is technically made of chemicals, there are things that are toxic, right? So how do we know the difference? Is it all just like a matter of degree?
That's where that second fact comes in. Natural doesn't always equal safe. And the example they give cyanide in almonds is a perfect illustration. We tend to think of natural as, good, inherently good. But nature is full of substances that can be harmful to us.
So that natural label, it can be misleading. But then doesn't that make us even more afraid of the synthetic stuff, the things that humans have created in a lab?
This is where we have to kind of flip the script, which is what the third fact does. Synthetic doesn't equal dangerous. Think about lab-created vitamins, for example. They might not sound as appealing as getting nutrients from, say, Whole Foods, but they can literally save lives.
Like I'm actually pregnant right now. And my doctor has me on prenatal vitamins, and those are definitely synthetic. So it's not really about where something comes from, it's about what it does.
Precisely. And that brings us to, I think, the most crucial concept in all of this. The dose makes the poison. Cocktail Party Chemistry really emphasizes that even water, if you drink gallons and gallons of it can disrupt your electrolyte balance and actually be fatal.
That's kind of wild. So even something as essential as water can be harmful at the wrong dose. But how do we know what right doses for different chemicals? I mean, there's someone out there figuring this out.
That's a fantastic question, and it really highlights the role of scientific research in all this. Toxicologists, they study how different chemicals affect living organisms, and they determine safe exposure levels based on tons and tons of data.
So there's a system for this. It's not just guesswork. But then why is there still so much fear and confusion around chemicals?
Well, that brings us to the final fact, media hype. The source material reminds us that, fear sells, but facts matter. Often, news headlines, social media posts about toxic chemicals, they exaggerate the risks, and they don't always mention the benefits or the context.
Yeah, it's like those clickbait articles, the ones that say, this everyday product is secretly killing you. They totally play on our anxieties and rarely give the full picture.
Exactly. And it's not surprising that those kinds of messages, they stick with us more than, say, dry scientific reports. Our brains are wired to pay attention to threats. And those attention-grabbing headlines, they really tap into that ancient survival mechanism.
So it's like this perfect storm. We have our own risk-averse brains, then there's information overload, and on top of that, we have the media hype. It all feeds into this chemophobia. Where do we even begin to untangle all of this?
Well, Cocktail Party Chemistry gives us a good starting point with these five facts. But the key takeaway, I think, is this. Don't let fear be your guide. Approach the world of chemicals with curiosity and critical thinking.
That sounds good in theory. But how do we actually do that? Like, are there specific questions we should ask when we see information about chemicals?
Absolutely. Next time you see a headline about a dangerous chemical, take a deep breath and ask yourself, what actually is this chemical? What's the dose we're talking about? And what does the scientific evidence say about its effects at that dose?
Okay, so those are our tools. But there's still so much to unpack, you know? What about long-term exposure to low doses of chemicals? That seems like a whole other can of worms.
Oh, it definitely adds another layer of complexity, and it's an area where we need more research. But the same principles still apply. We need to look at the specific chemical, the dose, how long the exposure is, and what the research actually says. And it's important to keep in mind, sometimes the absence of evidence isn't the same as evidence of absence, just because, you know, we haven't found a definite link between a chemical and a health problem. It doesn't necessarily mean there's no connection.
Right, like trying to prove a negative.
Yeah.
But then how do we make decisions when there's so much uncertainty? Like, it's impossible to wait for absolute proof about everything, right?
That's where this idea of risk assessment comes in. It's about weighing the potential benefits of using a chemical against the potential risks and making decisions based on, well, the best evidence we have.
So it's not about eliminating all risk, but about managing it in a smart way. But how do we know what's actually risky in the first place? I'm thinking of all those product labels that say toxin-free or chemical-free. Are those even helpful?
Those labels, honestly, they can be more misleading than helpful. Remember, everything is a chemical, so a chemical-free product, it's just not possible. Those labels often prey on our fears, you know? They don't really give us meaningful information about a product's safety.
Yeah, it feels like we're constantly being told what's safe, what's not. But the messages are often contradictory. Or they're based on flimsy evidence. How do we develop healthy skepticism without becoming totally cynical or, like, paranoid?
It's a balancing act, for sure. I think the key is to cultivate that critical thinking muscle. Don't just blindly accept everything you read or hear. Ask questions, think about the source, and look for conclusions that are based on evidence.
So be an informed consumer of information, not just letting headlines dictate our choices. But what about when even the experts disagree? Like, I remember that whole debate about BPA in plastic bottles. Some studies said it was harmful, others said it was safe. How do we make sense of that kind of conflicting information?
That's a perfect example. It shows how science is an ongoing process. New research often challenges what we thought we knew, and it can take time for everyone to agree. When you see conflicting information, it's important to look beyond the headlines. Consider how each study was done, how many people were involved, and if there might be any biases.
So don't just take the latest study as the final word. Look at the bigger picture, evaluate all the evidence. But that sounds like a lot of work. Do we really need to become amateur scientists just to buy groceries or shampoo?
You don't need a PhD to make good choices, but it does take some effort. Luckily, there are some great resources out there to help. Organizations like the World Health Organization, the National Institutes of Health, they publish reports and fact sheets that break down complex topics into something understandable.
So we can rely on those trusted sources to help us make sense of the science. But what about those in-the-moment decisions, like standing in the store trying to pick between two laundry detergents? Any quick tips for making those choices less fear-driven?
One strategy is to focus on ingredients you actually recognize. If a product has a huge list of, you know, unpronounceable chemicals, that could be a red flag. But if it has mostly familiar ingredients, things like baking soda or vinegar, you might feel better about it.
So stick with what's familiar. But what about when you just can't avoid a certain chemical? Like maybe there's pesticides used on crops in your area or air pollution in your city. What can you do to lessen those risks?
That's where understanding bioaccumulation is important. Some chemicals, like heavy metals, build up in our bodies over time, which can lead to health problems. So if you know you're exposed to something specific, talk to your doctor about how to minimize the impact.
So it's not always about avoiding exposure completely, but understanding how our bodies deal with those chemicals. Are there things we can do to help our body's natural detox systems?
Absolutely. A healthy diet, lots of water, regular exercise, those all help our bodies process and eliminate toxins. And there's even some evidence that certain foods, like cruciferous veggies, can boost those detox enzymes.
So a healthy lifestyle actually helps fight the negative effects of chemicals. That's good to know.
Yeah.
But what about those people who are convinced that all chemicals are bad?
Mm-hmm.
How do you even start a conversation with someone like that?
That's tough, but I think approaching it with empathy and respect is key. Remember, fear is a powerful emotion, and it's often rooted in a genuine concern for health and safety.
So instead of dismissing their fears or lecturing them about the science,
mm-hmm.
you start by listening, acknowledging their concerns.
Exactly. And sometimes just planting a seed of doubt is enough. Maybe mention a fact that challenges their view or share a link to a reliable source.
It's about opening their minds to the possibility that there might be more to the story.
Right.
But what about when it feels like you're fighting an uphill battle? Like when the media is full of scary headlines about toxic chemicals and everyone around you is panicking. How do you stay grounded in the science and not get swept up in the fear?
It can feel overwhelming, no doubt. But it's important to remember that fear is contagious. Just like you can catch a cold from someone, you can also catch their fear.
So be mindful about the information you're taking in and choose sources that are balanced and evidence-based.
Exactly. And surround yourself with people who, you know, who are also committed to critical thinking, to making rational decisions.
Find your tribe, stick together, and support each other.
Absolutely.
But what about the role of industry in all this? Some companies have a pretty bad track record when it comes to chemical safety. How do we know who to trust?
That's a very valid concern. Companies are in the business of making money, and sometimes that means cutting corners or downplaying risks. That's why it's crucial to have strong regulations to protect public health.
Right. We need agencies like the FDA, the EPA.
Exactly. To ensure that products are properly tested and that consumers know about potential risks.
But what about chemicals that haven't been thoroughly tested? There are so many chemicals in use today, and we just don't have enough data on all of them. Does that mean it's impossible to really know what's safe?
You're right. There are gaps in our knowledge, and that can be frustrating. But that's also why the precautionary principle is so important. The idea that when there's uncertainty about safety, it's better to be cautious.
So until we have more data, it's best to minimize exposure
to those chemicals that haven't been fully vetted.
But how do we do that in a world where chemicals are everywhere? It seems impossible to avoid them completely.
You're absolutely right. It's impossible to live in a bubble. But we can make informed choices that reduce our exposure.
So it's about finding that balance between being aware and taking action.
Exactly.
We need to know about the risks, but also take steps to protect ourselves.
Exactly.
And our families.
And those steps don't have to be huge or overwhelming. Sometimes small changes make a big difference.
Like choosing organic produce, using glass or stainless steel containers instead of plastic, and being careful about the cleaning products we use.
Those are all great examples. And remember, even small changes add up over time.
So it's not about being perfect. It's about making progress and feeling good about the choices we make.
Absolutely.
But what about those times when it feels like we're doing everything right, but we're still getting mixed messages, like maybe we're eating healthy, exercising, avoiding processed foods, using natural cleaning products, but then we read a scary headline about some new chemical threat? How do we stay sane with all this information overload?
It's important to remember the media often focuses on what's sensational, scary, attention-grabbing, and that's not always a true reflection of the actual risks.
But take those headlines with a grain of salt. Remember, there's usually more to the story.
Exactly, and focus on the things you can control. You can't control air pollution in your city, but you can control the air quality in your home. You can't control what pesticides the farmers use, but you can choose organic produce.
So find those areas where you can make a difference.
Exactly.
And remember, you're not alone in this. There are lots of other people trying to live healthy, informed lives.
Absolutely. And sometimes just knowing that can make all the difference.
Okay, so we've talked about the why of this whole chemophobia thing. Our brains, the media, our own experiences, it all plays a part. But now I'm really curious about the HOW. Like, what can we actually do to make better choices about the chemicals in our everyday lives?
That's a great question. You know, it's easy to feel kind of stuck with all this information, but there are practical steps we can take. And you definitely don't need a chemistry degree to do it.
Okay, I'm all ears. Where do we even begin?
Well, one of the simplest things, but also one of the most effective, is just being a more aware consumer. It's more than just reading labels, although that's important too. It's about thinking critically about the products we choose for our homes.
So not just grabbing the first thing off the shelf.
Yeah.
But really stopping to think about what's in it.
Exactly. And this is where those resources we talked about earlier can be really helpful. Websites like the Environmental Working Group, they've already done a lot of the research. They rate products based on their ingredients and potential health risks.
That's super useful. I mean, most of us don't have time to become like chemical detectives. But besides those resources, any red flags we should watch out for on labels?
Well, if a label is bragging about being chemical-free, that's a sure sign they're playing on chemophobia. Because like we said, everything I is a chemical. Also, really long ingredient lists with names you can't even pronounce. Those might be worth looking into more carefully.
So going for simpler formulas, especially for things we use a lot or that come in direct contact with our skin.
Exactly. And it's not just personal care products. It's cleaning supplies, even furniture. Remember, we're exposed to chemicals in so many ways. It's not just what we eat or drink.
Right. Okay. So our homes are a big area where we can make changes. But what about food? That feels like a minefield with all the stuff about pesticides and GMOs and additives.
It is complex, for sure. But knowledge is power, even here. Choosing organic produce, when you can, reduces pesticide exposure. But it's not the only solution. Washing fruits and veggies really well helps remove residues. And you know those dirty dozen lists? They can guide you toward produce where organic might matter more.
Oh, those lists always stress me out. Like, I should be buying all organic, but I can't always afford it. Is it really that big a deal?
It's all about balance, you know, and what works for your life. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Even small steps to reduce chemical exposure can make a difference.
That's good to hear. So it's not an all or nothing thing. Any other food-related tips you can share?
Well, choosing whole, unprocessed foods whenever possible, that's a great way to cut down on additives and preservatives. And be mindful of packaging, too. Opt for glass or stainless steel over plastic, especially when you're heating food. That can reduce the amount of chemicals that leach out.
Okay, this is starting to feel a lot less overwhelming, more like a set of choices I can actually make. Mm-hmm. But I gotta admit, sometimes I just get tired of trying to stay on top of it all. How do you keep from getting sucked into that worry spiral?
It is a lot, and it's totally fine to take breaks from all the information. Something that helps me is to focus on the positive. Instead of dwelling on the dangers, I try to remind myself of all the amazing ways chemistry has made our lives better.
Right, like we wouldn't have most medicines without chemistry, or all the technology that connects us to the world.
Exactly. Shifting your focus to the benefits, it can help you appreciate the power of chemistry while still being aware of the risks.
Okay, so we've covered what we bring into our homes and our bodies, but what about the environment we live in? Air pollution, water quality, that kind of stuff. Those feel harder to control.
You're right, those are big systemic issues. They need solutions on a much larger scale. But even there, we're not completely powerless. Supporting policies that protect the environment, choosing eco-friendly transportation, even just planting trees in your neighborhood. Those are all ways to contribute.
It's like recognizing that their individual actions have a ripple effect, and that together we can create a healthier environment for everyone.
Exactly. And don't underestimate the power of community. Get involved in local initiatives, support groups that are working on environmental problems. Those are all ways to make your voice heard.
So it's not just about our own little bubbles. It's about being active citizens and pushing for change on a bigger level.
Absolutely.
But what about the mental and emotional side of all this? How do we deal with the anxiety, the fear, that feeling of being bombarded with threats all the time?
That's where self-care is so important. It's okay to take breaks from the news, to unplug from social media, to spend time in nature, do things that bring you joy and peace. It can help you find your balance again.
It's a good reminder that we're not just brains trying to process information. We're whole people with emotional needs.
Beautifully said. And sometimes just talking about your fears and anxieties with someone you trust can help you feel less alone.
So find those supportive communities, online, in person, wherever you can, share experiences and learn from each other.
Exactly. And remember, if the anxiety or fear gets to be too much, there's no shame in getting professional help. There are therapists who specialize in things like eco-anxiety and other types of fear related to the environment.
That's really good to know. So we've talked about practical tips, resources, even the emotional side of it all. As we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you hope our listener takes away?
I hope they walk away feeling empowered, not paralyzed. Chemophobia feeds on fear and bad information. But when we understand the science, think critically, and focus on what WE can do, we can make good choices that protect our health. A&D, our peace of mind.
That's a great message. So to our listener out there, stay curious, stay informed, and don't let chemophobia take away your joy of learning.
Well said. Until next time.
See you then.